Have you ever stopped to think about how we feed the nearly 8 billion people on this planet? And you know that number just keeps going up, right? It's a truly massive challenge, and figuring out how to do that without messing up the environment is, well, one of the biggest hurdles we face. So today we're diving deep into a pretty key piece of that puzzle, fertilizer technology.
Yeah, that's a big one for sure. We've been digging into this issue brief from the Scientific Panel for Responsible Plant Nutrition, and it really lays out why we need to change the way we think about how we feed our crops.
I'm with you on that.
So the main thing we want to get across in this deep dive, you know, is why these new types of fertilizers are so crucial.
And how they actually work.
Exactly. But we don't want to get lost in the weeds.
Right. No super complicated science here. Just the need-to-know stuff.
Exactly. Because when you look at how we're doing things now, it's pretty clear we have a lot of room for improvement.
Oh, for sure. This issue brief actually points out something that's kind of shocking. With the typical nitrogen fertilizers, you know, the common ones, less than 60% of what's applied actually makes it into the plant.
Yeah, less than 60%.
Think about that. The rest is just lost, gone. And it gets even worse for other essential nutrients like phosphorus and all those micronutrients plants need. They often get locked up in the soil, so the efficiency there can be even lower.
That's the thing that's so interesting here, and it's important to understand. This isn't just about farmers having to shell out more cash for fertilizer. This inefficiency really messes with the environment. So I guess, where do we start? Maybe with why we even need these novel fertilizers in the first place. Why is it so urgent?
Yeah, great question. I think the most obvious reason is just the sheer number of people on the planet, more mouths to feed, right? Naturally, we need more food. It's basic math.
Exactly. And for decades, we've leaned pretty heavily on those traditional fertilizers to get those bigger harvests. But like we just talked about, they're not always used efficiently. And that leads us to that second crucial point, the environment. Conventional fertilizers, well, they can be real troublemakers when it comes to the environment.
Yeah, we're talking about things like fertilizer runoff, right? It washes into rivers and lakes, pollutes the water. And then there's the whole issue of gases being released that contribute to climate change.
Exactly. Nitrogen is a big culprit here. It moves around easily in the environment. It can seep down through the soil, contaminate groundwater, or it can escape into the air as ammonia, which is a gas.
Not good.
And it gets worse. Some microbes in the soil, you know, those tiny organisms, they can actually transform nitrogen into nitrous oxide, which is a really potent greenhouse gas, way worse than carbon dioxide. The issue brief explains how this can happen regardless of the type of nitrogen fertilizer you start with.
It's like a chain reaction.
It is.
And that inefficiency we talked about at the beginning is like the root cause of all these problems. Mm. If the plant isn't absorbing those nutrients, they got to go somewhere. And, well, unfortunately, they often end up where they cause the most damage.
It's like a double whammy. Farmers need more and more fertilizer to feed the growing population.
Right.
But a big chunk of it is just wasted, which not only costs them money, but also hurts the environment around their farms. That's the core reason why we need to look at different approaches.
It's a pretty compelling case for change. So let's get down to brass tacks. What exactly are these novel fertilizers? What makes them different?
So the issue brief defines novel fertilizers as these advanced formulations that are specifically designed to, you know, do a better job.
Of course.
Delivering nutrients to crops, making sure the plants get what they need.
Right.
And minimizing those negative environmental effects we were talking about.
Now, I think it's really important to clarify here, and the issue brief makes this point, that when we say novel fertilizers, we're not just talking about organic fertilizers.
Right, right.
You know, the ones that come from natural sources or those microbial products or biostimulants.
We're focusing on inorganic fertilizers.
Yes. The ones that are either chemically manufactured or derived from minerals.
Right. And the issue brief then puts these novel fertilizers into different categories based on the technology they use.
Kind of like how they enhance their efficiency.
Exactly. So the first category is inhibitor-treated fertilizers, sometimes called stabilized fertilizers. Can you break those down for us a little?
Sure. Think of these fertilizers as having a built-in slow-release mechanism. They use these special ingredients called inhibitors.
Inhibitors.
Yeah. And they basically put the brakes on the natural chemical reactions that happen in the soil when it comes to nitrogen.
Gotcha.
Specifically, they target the conversion of urea, which is a super common nitrogen fertilizer, into ammonium, and then how that ammonium changes further into nitrate.
Makes sense.
And the issue brief gives some examples of these inhibitors like NBPT and nitroparin.
So what's the benefit of slowing things down like that? Well, by putting the brakes on those transformations, we can cut down on the amount of ammonia gas escaping into the air.
Ah, you're talking about ammonia volatilization again.
Yep, that's the one. And we can also reduce the production of that nitrous oxide, the really potent greenhouse gas. The issue brief mentions that these inhibitors might give you a slight bump in yield, you know, make the crops grow a bit better, and they help you use nitrogen more efficiently. But the real win is cutting down on those nitrogen losses into the atmosphere.
It's all about keeping it where it belongs.
Exactly. And the cool thing is, scientists are constantly working on new and improved inhibitors, so we're getting better at this all the time.
That's encouraging. So moving on, we have another major category, slow and controlled release formulations. These sound pretty self-explanatory, but is there a difference between them?
Oh, definitely. So slow-release fertilizers, they're like the slow and steady runners. They gradually release their nutrients over time. But controlled-release fertilizers are more like, I don't know, think of a timed sprinkler system. They're designed to release those nutrients at a very specific rate.
A very controlled release.
Exactly. And the goal of both, as the issue brief highlights in Figure 2, is to match up the timing of when the crop needs those nutrients with when they're available from the fertilizer. It's all about making sure the plant has the right amount of food at the right time.
It's like a nutrients on demand system for plants.
Exactly. No more feast or famine cycles.
Yeah.
How do they achieve this controlled release, though?
Mostly through coatings. It's pretty ingenious. The issue brief goes into all sorts of materials they use for these coatings. They range from things like sulfur and waxes, which are pretty simple, to these more complex polymers, and even things like biochar. Figure 4 in the issue brief shows how these coatings act as a barrier.
Ah, so they control the release of nutrients from the fertilizer.
Precisely. They determine how quickly those soluble fertilizer granules dissolve and release their nutrients. It's a very clever approach.
And I noticed the issue brief also mentioned that there's a shift towards using biologically based and biodegradable coatings.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There are concerns about plastic pollution from some of the traditional polymer coatings, you know?
Right.
So figure 5 in the issue brief shows this change. Researchers are looking into coatings made from things like plant-based polymers and hydrogels.
So they break down naturally in the soil.
Exactly. And they've even got this concept of biological coatings that include microorganisms or enzymes.
Wow, that's getting pretty advanced. So that leads us to the next category, microbial coatings. This sounds like something straight out of science fiction.
It does, doesn't it? But here's the thing, and the issue brief mentions this. We don't have a lot of published information yet on how well these microbes, you know, whether it's bacteria, fungi, their dormant spores, or even enzymes, actually survive.
After being applied to the fertilizer and then put into the soil.
Exactly. And we also need more data on whether they actually help crops grow in the long run. You know, the environment around a fertilizer granule in the soil can be pretty harsh. Making sure these microbes survive and do their job is a big challenge.
A big challenge. All right, then we have nanofertilizers. Now, this sounds futuristic.
It really is cutting-edge stuff. Nanofertilizers are all about these tiny particles. I mean, incredibly tiny. We're talking about 1 to 100 nanometers.
That's billions of times smaller than a meter.
It is. The idea is that because these particles are so incredibly small, plants might absorb them differently than traditional fertilizers.
So they might be more efficient.
Yeah, exactly. And they might even give plant growth a little boost, like a stimulant.
Interesting. The issue brief mentioned nanourea in India. They said that's one of the few nano fertilizers that's been commercially successful.
It has, outside of the lab at least. But the issue brief also says we still had a lot of questions.
About their effectiveness and safety.
Exactly. The issue brief is really clear about this. We need a lot more testing in real world conditions, you know, out in the fields. And we need to make sure they're safe for the environment and the food we eat before we start using them everywhere.
Makes sense. So moving on, we have carrier technologies. What are some of the examples they gave?
Oh, the issue brief highlights some cool approaches here. One is layered double hydroxides, LDHs for short. They're like anionic clays with these layers, and they can swap charged particles or ions between these layers.
So they can slowly release nutrients.
Yeah, like phosphorus and molybdenum. But, and this is important, the phosphorus release from LDHs can be super slow. And sometimes the benefits they see for plant growth might be because they change the soil acidity rather than just slowly releasing phosphorus.
Interesting.
Plus, they can't hold that much nutrient overall.
Okay, and then there are metal organic frameworks, or MOFs. I've heard about those before, but they sound super complicated.
They are pretty intricate structures. Think of them like tiny structured sponges with metal ions and organic molecules all linked together. The idea is that they can trap nutrients in their pores and then release them slowly as the organic bits break down over time. And if the metal ions themselves are also nutrients for plants, like iron, then you can have a lot of nutrient content. But, and the issue brief points this out, we need to see if they actually improve crop yields significantly out in the fields.
That's always the key, right? Real-world results. What about graphene-based materials? I know graphene is a hot topic in a lot of different industries, so how does it fit into fertilizers?
Good question. So graphene, which is basically these incredibly thin sheets of carbon, can be used in a couple of ways. They can load nutrients onto it or use it as a coating for those traditional fertilizer granules.
Makes sense.
The goal is to get that slower nutrient release or make the fertilizer easier to handle. But, and there's always a but, the issue brief brings up a few concerns. Yeah, like whether using graphene would actually dilute the concentration of the nutrients in the final product. And also, what happens to the graphene materials in the soil long term? Do they stick around?
Ah, so there are trade-offs to consider. So we've talked about all these cool new fertilizer technologies, but the issue brief also brought up some pretty big challenges that need to be addressed before farmers can really start using them widely. What are the main roadblocks?
Well, I think the biggest hurdle, and this often comes up, is cost. Novel fertilizers are just more expensive to make than conventional fertilizers.
Mm.
At the end of the day, farmers need to see a clear financial benefit to justify spending more.
It's all about the bottom line, right?
Yeah.
If that extra expense doesn't translate to bigger yields or other clear advantages, it's a tough sell.
Absolutely. And the issue brief also points out that these novel fertilizers don't always deliver on their promises when you take them out of the lab and into the field. You know, something that looks amazing in a controlled environment might not perform as well when you've got different soil types, weather changes, and all those other factors that farmers have to deal with.
Yeah, the real world is messy.
It is. Then there are logistical issues. Things like how easy these new fertilizers are to handle, store, and use with existing farm equipment. Those are big practical considerations for farmers. And then there's the whole challenge of actually making these advanced formulations and producing enough to meet the huge global demand.
Scaling up production is never easy.
It's not.
And then there are regulatory hurdles. Some of these new materials might have some environmental or health impacts.
For sure.
You know, things like microplastics from certain coatings or uncertainties around the long-term effects of those nanomaterials we talked about.
Right. And getting regulatory approval can be a long and complicated process. It's a real barrier.
Definitely. And lastly, the issue brief really stressed the need for better field testing and standardized ways to evaluate how well these novel fertilizers work.
Yeah, that's key. If you don't have reliable data from different farming environments, it's really hard for farmers and policymakers to make informed decisions.
So how should we be evaluating these novel fertilizers? The issue brief gave four main things to look at.
It did.
First up, the mode of action. We need to understand exactly how these fertilizers are working, like at a basic level.
Right. What are they doing in the soil and to the plant? How are they affecting things?
Exactly. And the issue brief makes a really important point.
Yeah.
Any claims about how a novel fertilizer works need to be backed up by solid scientific evidence.
Claims have to be tested.
Yep. And the results should be made public. And ideally, other researchers should verify those claims, you know, check the work and make sure it's solid.
Solid science. What's the second aspect?
Agronomic and environmental efficiency. It's not enough for a fertilizer to just release nutrients slowly or in a controlled way. We need to see real, measurable improvements in how well crops grow and how well they use those nutrients. And importantly, we need to see a decrease in how much of those nutrients are lost to the environment.
It's about making sure the fertilizer is actually doing what it's supposed to do.
Exactly. And the issue brief really emphasized that this means testing things out in real agricultural fields in lots of different locations and over several growing seasons. And it's not just about measuring how much the crop yields, but also about carefully tracking those environmental losses. How much is leaching into the water or escaping into the air?
So it's a comprehensive evaluation.
It is. What's next?
The ease of handling and logistics.
Yes. Practicality. Like we talked about before, a fertilizer might be amazing on paper, but if it's a nightmare for farmers to actually use, then it's not going to work.
Exactly. Things like how strong the fertilizer granules are, how easily they flow through equipment, and how well they hold up in storage. All of those things are super important.
Absolutely. And finally, we have to look at the overall environmental footprint of these fertilizers.
Yeah, the big picture
The
stuff.
cost, the complexity of making them, and how much energy is used in the process. We also have to consider what raw materials they're using and how they handle any waste products.
So it's about looking at the entire life cycle.
Exactly. So, with all of these pieces of the puzzle, what does the issue brief suggest as the way forward? It seems like collaboration is key.
It is. Collaboration is huge. The issue brief outlines what different groups need to do. Governments need to step up and create policies that support all of this, maybe even offer incentives to encourage farmers to adopt more sustainable practices. And regulations need to be clear, streamlined, and based on good science.
Definitely. And researchers, they need to keep innovating, but they also need to work closely with the fertilizer industry to develop products that are not only effective, but also cost-effective and can be produced on a large scale. And of course, they need to prioritize rigorous testing in real-world settings using those standardized guidelines we were talking about.
Absolutely. And the fertilizer industry itself needs to invest in research and development, both in-house and through partnerships with universities and government agencies.
And they need to be upfront with farmers about what their products can do and set some clear sustainability goals for their operations.
Right. Transparency is key.
And lastly, farmers need to be part of the process too.
They're the ones using these products day in and day out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Their feedback on how well these fertilizers work in their fields and how easy they are to use, that's super valuable. They can also advocate for more sustainable products and practices. You know, they have a voice.
They do. So let's talk about what success would look like in this whole novel fertilizer endeavor. The issue brief painted a picture of a future where farmers have lots of different novel fertilizers to choose from, and all those products have proven benefits.
So that would mean more crops to feed a growing population and using those precious nutrients more efficiently.
Exactly. And just as importantly, it would mean a big drop in greenhouse gas emissions from fertilizer use.
And less nutrient runoff into the environment.
Right. And we might even see improvements in the nutritional quality of our food.
And ideally, these new fertilizers would be easier for farmers to use and would have a smaller environmental footprint.
Less energy used in production, less waste, the whole package.
And we'd have clear, evidence-based standards for registering and labeling fertilizers so farmers would know exactly what they're getting and could choose the best products for their needs.
Informed decisions.
This deep dive into the issue brief from the Scientific Panel for Responsible Plant Nutrition really drives home the potential of these new fertilizer technologies to help us create a more sustainable and efficient agricultural system.
It does, but it also highlights the importance of tackling those challenges.
Those cost issues, the scaling up production, and making sure these fertilizers are thoroughly evaluated in the real world.
Right. Real world conditions.
It makes you think about the role we all play.
It does.
Whether we're consumers choosing what food to buy or citizens who can influence agricultural policies, we all have a part to play in encouraging these innovative solutions.
This deep dive should leave you with some food for thought. How are we going to produce food in the future? What's going to happen to our planet?
Big questions. And we encourage you to check out the issue brief yourself, dig a little deeper, and see what's happening in this important field.
There's a lot to learn, that's for sure.
There is.
But it's definitely worth it.